Well, how's your core? Right? Don't you see all kinds of articles and things about how you've got to have a good core? Now I'm sucking in my gut for you because, you know, it's like I'm just trying to act like I have a good core. But, right, I just Googled it quickly, and here was immediately what Google brought up. Harvard Health, the real-world benefits of strengthening your core. The first hit was the Mayo Clinic, why you should strengthen your core. Healthline.com, importance of core strength, 11 benefits of a strong core, nationwide children's hospital, core stability, why, what it is and why it's important, right? I could go on. There were, I should have gotten the number. There's, I'm sure, millions of hits that Google brought into me because we hear all this about the importance of core. I'm using props today, and I brought this prop. So in light of that, I recently got an ab wheel. Does anyone else have an ab wheel? These work. I will just say all I do is a few of them, and the next day I'm going like, oh. Oh, so, but right, we hear all of this and we use tools and various things because we hear about the importance of strengthening our core. With a good core, and that there's actually seven muscles. I didn't even realize the diaphragm was one that you're trying to strengthen in your core work. With this core work, you have a strong trunk that's able to move you out into the world. So you want a strong core. What's the core of the church? For those who follow Jesus here, do you want a strong church? I hope we would say yes. But what's the core? What does it mean to have a strong core? That's where we're going in the next weeks. We have renamed, this is not simply practically that we're doing it, but we renamed our lead team the core team because we've now organized them around the core things that our church will be firing on in order to operate. But it's not just, again, the pragmatism of this is what we've organized around. We did that because it's what we see the Bible directing God's people to. And so in this series, we want to root our core, I think, is what I called it. Because we want to say it's not just a practical way of organizing. We want to consider the fact that what we call our core as a church is rooted in what God has revealed he wants his church to be about, to be engaged in. And so we're revisiting. We've done that before as a church, but it's a good thing to do periodically. As you think about reimagining your vision and where you're going, we thought it'd be helpful for the end of ordinary time. Because ordinary time is the season in the church when the church just thinks about being the church. And so as we think about ending ordinary time, moving to Advent, we want to think about the core. And today our first topic is worship. And so we come to this psalm. It's called the Venite because that's the Latin when the Bible got translated into Latin, the first Latin word, O come. But in this, I want us to read it together because here's how this psalm worked. We think, and again, we're not sure on these kind of conjectures, but let's just go because it works. We're going to read it this way. That the first phrase there in verse 1, O come, that's this idea of walk is this insinuation of that Hebrew word. Like walk toward the temple, come on. Come. And so the idea was that at the Feast of Tabernacles, God's people would gather outside the courts and they'd start singing this. And lines 1 through 2 were the call to worship from the pastor priest guy leading. Verses 3 and 5 were the response of the people. So that's how we're going to read that section. And then in verse 6, O come, that one literally means enter in. And the thought is they had now in this feast celebration entered into the temple courts and it was this draw in deeply to the face of God, it literally says. And so there was again a call in 6 and then 7, what we say lines A, B, and C were the response of the congregation saying, all right. So if you draw lines, draw a line over today because then what happens at today? It was an oracle. They say, well, what that means is the people, in light of coming into worship, heard the leader, the priest, give a sermon. And they gave this sermon. The flow of worship is here. And that's why this has commonly been used for worship. So we're going to read it that way. I'm going to read 1 and 2. You're going to read 3, 4, and 5. I'll read 6. You'll read 7a, b, and c. Stop at the period after hand, and then I'll read the rest of it. Okay? If it's complicated, I'm going to give us directions, especially if you zone down on that, because we all zone out good times. So read with me. I'll read 1 and 2. Oh, come, let us sing to the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Let us come into his presence with thanksgiving. Let us make a joyful noise to him with songs of praise. Now you read 3 through 5.
For the Lord is a great God, and a great King above all gods. In his hands are the depths of the earth, the heights of the mountains are his also. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land.
I read 6. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. You read the next 3 lines.
For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, and the sheep of his hand.
Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as on the day at Massa in the wilderness, when your fathers put me to the test and put me to the proof, though they had seen my work. For 40 years, I loathed that generation, and that word is more heartbreaking. This is just something that repulses, because not an anger like capricious fly off the handle. Anyway, for 40 years, I loathed that generation and said, they are a people who go astray in their heart, and they have not known my ways. Therefore, I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So with that flow, here's where I want us to consider for the next few minutes. Just in those 3 sections, right? The first call, you respond. That's one. The second movement, another call, you responded. And then this final oracle sermon. I just want to look at each of those 3 and consider this. What are they telling us? What are they doing as we worship? Because we're considering the first core of the church, and that is that God's people worship. So what's this first movement doing? Notice, of course, look at verses 1 through 5, that it is filled with emotion words, right? Joy. Oh, come into his presence with thanksgiving and make another, and then in verse 2, again, a joyful noise. There's an emotional response, but the key thing really that you want to focus on, and that this goes, did you notice what you were saying? You said 3, he's a great God, but then it ends, king above all gods. So coming into worship, you're in the outer courts and you're going, I know right here there's all kinds of other options. I know that the Moabites, I know that right there up on the high places where our grandfathers were tempted to worship. And I know that before we took over, Baal was here, and there's still people trying to dabble with him in the privacy of their homes. And I know that down there, Egypt is worshiped, right? And so, what did you continue saying? In verse 4, in his hands are the depth of the earth and the heights of the mountain. Why? Because there were deities that were put on the heights of mountains, and then there were others that controlled the valleys and the dark places and the unknown. And that's literally what the depths of the earth is its unexplored ranges. And then the sea is his. In some of the ancient Near Eastern religions, the sea was older than their gods. And so it was the place of chaos. It was the place of unknown. It was scary, right? You couldn't control it. So there's other options out there. But his hand holds them and formed them. So in all of those stories, in all of those beliefs, you go, no, there is a true one and there is one God and he controls all of it. Do you see, one commentator was like, all of the complexity of all these other things, there's just a simplicity was the word he kept using here. A simplicity of there is one true God who is writing one true story, who is moving his plan of love and rescue along. And so what's this first movement doing? It is rooting God's people in the true story. Because God is aware that he has competitors out there. False stories. false ways of looking at the world, false ways of approaching what the good life is. I mean, is that not where you came in this morning? That we have a world that says, oh, no, no, no. The good life is having stuff and consumerism. The good life is having kids that are well-adjusted and make sure you put every activity in their life or the right activity so they can get into UVA or Harvard or expressive individualism. Just be yourself. Find yourself. Do that. I talk about these things all the time in worship because that's what happens in worship. Is we're looking at all these other stories going, oh, but life is found in the true God who formed and made the earth. For he is the true story and writing the true story. Prop number two. You ready for this? This is embarrassing, but I embarrass myself all the time. Anyone know what this is? Just for men, control GX beard. It is coloring. Because when I go to my winter beard, I don't like how gray it is. And so you put this on every day for a little while, and then I can read you the instructions. You see this thing. Once you reach the color that you want, yeah, can you believe I'm saying this in public? once you reach the color that you want, you then go to using it every 3 days. But why do I have to use it every 3 days? Because it's not like the hair color that some may use, where it then grows out and you just have to do root touch-ups. This washes out. It's not that permanent. The idea that our God is the true story fades, just like my beard, when you go out there on Tuesday and on Wednesday and on Thursday. And coming in here is another wash. It's another time of going, oh yeah, oh yeah. There's a true story, and this is the true God, and Jesus is risen from the dead, and some cool stuff can happen around here. Right? And so that's our first movement. Is that as we come out of the courts into here, God says, I know that, but I am the true story. Before I move on, I want to add this with one more prop. It's simply the fact of the plural of all of this, right? In these first lines and this whole song. That it's communal worship. You know, we all struggle with, if we're honest, this whole thing. We were just in Yosemite last week, right? It's like, I hear so often, it's like, oh, well, I'd rather just be out in nature and worshiping. Or be up at home, it's just so much easier. Or this is why we, you know, have struggled with, a lot of Reformed folks, what do you do with Zoom? That it is made to be communal. Why? That's a huge question. And there's a lot of ways to do it. What we see here is that it is communal. I'm going to simply hit one issue with one prop. Is Laura Ford here today? I think she had something.
She's not, no.
Yeah. She turned me on to these. These are, anybody know what these are? Calf sleeves. So I continue, you saw the other a few weeks, to pull my calf. And she turned me on to having calf sleeves, these support things that are really thick, but then they squeeze the living daylights out of my calf as I work out. Right? And so they add support because I have something around my calf. That's what communal worshiping is doing for us. It gives a structure, a support. It puts folks around us that help to hold up and strengthen what we're doing. It's the classic Bonhoeffer quote that you hear me say often. He wrote this in Life Together. He said, I need the Christ in you, and you need the Christ that's in me. Brothers need brothers. Why does he continue? Because the Christ in my own heart is weaker than the Christ in the word of my brother's heart. In his own heart, my own heart is uncertain. My brother's is sure. Do you see that by having something around us, it gives buttresses, it gives strength, it gives a firmer stance to us. And we tend to go like, oh no, that's weak. That's like, I can do this on my own. It's like God says, that's not how I am. I'm in a trinity. We're made for communion. And so finding time to come to communal worship is part of this call, too. And again, no shame in that. I'm not going to look at you silly if you skip worship and or late worship. We already talked about that, right? Because I understand. But this is where the drawing of our heart. Okay, enough said on that one. So that's our first movement. What's it doing? It's rooting us together, you might say, in the true story. Second movement, verses 6 and 7c, through 7c, we said. Come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the sheep of his hand. What's happening here? For one, that word worship, come, let us worship. Do you know what it literally means in the Hebrew? To bow down. Look at the next word on that. And bow down. Do you know what that word means? It's a different Hebrew word that means bow down. What's the next thing there? Then let us kneel. You know, what's that illustrating? Bowing down. There's this threefold call to humble yourself, to realize your place. It's reminding us who the true God is. And I have a quote, if I can find it. One comment Derek Kidner wrote, it is to accept our place and acknowledge his. To accept our place and acknowledge, we do that in confession every week, don't we? In that movement. And yet, what comes immediately after that in worship? Grace. The words of forgiveness and pardon, what comes here? Verse 7. Notice you had to say it. He was before the God, the great God. Now he's what? Our God. I own this. I know this God. I have intimacy with God. She's not just a woman. She is my woman when I talk about Lord. I know that could sound bad. But you know what I mean. There's a knowing, which he says later, the word knowing in verse 10 at the last line, which one commentator said that knowing is really could be translated love, because the Bible doesn't know the difference. It uses those words, that Hebrew word, interchangeably, but I'm ahead of myself. But not just that. Why? Because this God who is mine is a caring God who takes me as his sheep and provides and cares and gives life and feeding and protection, so that I can say I'm in his hand. And did you notice the repetition of hand? We're there in 7, we're the sheep of his hand. But look up in verse 4. This same hand made the depths of the earth. In verse 5, this same hand formed the dry land. This powerful hand is now this caring hand. This hand that is mine, that comforts, that comes to me. So what's this movement? It's in this movement that we see that it's not, if the first one rooted us in the story, this one root in the true story, this one roots us in the true God. That is his character. Because what happens Monday through Saturday and sometimes Sunday at 8:30? I go, is God really holding me in his hand? Really? Is God really good? How could he allow this to happen in my week? Is God absent? Does he even know me, or is he my God? Right? That we get all these other ideas of what God is like or could be. The true God. Yeah, I believe in the true God. But we start doubting his character, doubting what he's like. And so what does worship do? It comes and goes, not only is he the one that offers you the true story, this is what he's really like. He's a God of care. He's a God of grace. He's a God who doesn't want you to perform. He wants you to love him with all your, right? Number 3. Oh, I found my post-it that I'd lost.
This is number 4.
Oh, is this 4? You're right. I can count too sometimes. These are the shoes I wore to the men's retreat, and I meant to use them. I was talking to Dave. You can see Dave's for it. But when we were all sitting there, I was so distracted at one point because I knew I was using this illustration. I was like, this is going to work. We had thrown the axes out in the grass, and they were covered with blades of grass, but also with seeds, right? They're called, Norma, hitchhikers, right? There's various hitchhiker seeds. She's our master gardener. Hedge parsley, calico aster, common burdock, jumping chola. There's a bunch of other ones, but they're things that attach to animals or to us, and then the way they spread is you walk around with them, and they've now been dropped in my yard, and I'll have to kill them next. Sorry, I'm not St. Francis of Assisi. But, right, they hitchhike along. And actually, one article I found said, in fact, the average car carries 2 to 4 hitchhiker plants at any given time. Isn't that wild? What's my point? When I go out there, God gets hitchhikers attached to him. They're my fault. They're the world's fault. The world, the flesh, and the devil. But right? He gets things put on him that say, he's saying I'm good, and instead there's a weed that's going, no, you're not. He's going, I've got you, and instead there's a thing attached to him that goes, are you, you know, or do you? And so coming into worship is the place of cleaning our shoes, to kill that analogy, right? It's the place where not only is the true story, but he's the true God. Because we say, prove it. Are you a fake? And so it is, the second movement, to be clear, is reacquainting ourselves with the true God. Reacquainting ourselves with the true God and what he's actually like. Now, the third movement, as we land this. What's the third movement doing? If the first one is rooting us in the true story, the second one's reacquainting us with the true God. Oh, I'm just realizing now I should have an R word, but I don't. The third movement is drawing out a response from us, right? I mentioned that it's 7D. Today, if you hear his voice, is a sermon. What did you hear there? Well, I know all of you know exactly what this is talking about because we just did a sermon series on Numbers and you heard a series on Massa and Meribah, right? No, I can't hardly remember what I preached 2 weeks ago, so I know that you don't do that. Massa and Meribah, we looked at it in Numbers 20. It's also another time, it's called the same, well, Meribah is in Exodus 17. They're the times of testing when Israel said, I'm so thirsty and we're in the desert. And Moses had to strike the rock the first time, and the second time, in Numbers, he had to speak to the rock, and we did a sermon on that a few weeks ago. But what was happening? The people of God were testing. They weren't having hearts. Do you see in verse 8 and at the end of verse 10? The word heart. It wasn't just, it's this, what Laura brought up. She didn't even know. It wasn't just their actions. It was that their hearts were not latching on to the true story and the true Lord. They were resisting it. They were testing him. They had the I don't know about that up, right? And that fed itself and led to complaining and grumbling. And so here, remember I mentioned, when were the people singing this when we did the reading? The Feast of Tabernacles. What was the Feast of Tabernacles? God's people came to Jerusalem. They set up tents. They didn't live in houses made of brick and wood. They set up tents. Why? Because they were reenacting the wandering in the wilderness. So isn't it interesting that the sermon came from the wandering in the wilderness here? And it says to them, as you're embodying this story, the true story of what God's done in deliverance, don't be like God's people who resisted him, who doubted him, who tested him. It picks up the word of Massa means testing. Meribah means quarreling. And so verse 9 picks up the word, fathers put me to the test. What's it saying? It's saying instead have a soft heart. What are the steps that you do to not be in rebellion, but to be in line with this true God who offers you a true story? I mean, you even can hear in 8, just to point out, 9, excuse me, see how the speaker changes? One commentator said that should be in quotes. Further, because it's before it's been, if you hear his voice, the preacher's been talking, but then it's God speaking in 9. When your fathers put me to the test, put me to the proof, had seen, though they had seen my work, and God is entreating his people, respond. Respond in love. That's, I mentioned this already, but right, that the last line in 10, that they have not known my ways. The commentator, this is Van Gameren, said, to know is to love his ways. There is no different Hebrew word. To be in a love relationship. But in that, let's just name our propensity. Okay. Then I'm going to do it. I'm going to commit myself. And then isn't it interesting how this ends? For they shall not enter. Pause. Do you remember what I said the word in verse 6 was? Oh, come to enter. Exact same Hebrew word. I wish they'd used the same translation in the English so we could see it. But as you have come into worship and saying, what you're really doing is you're entering into the true story of rest, not work. Of him being committed to you, not you making sure you show his your commitment to him. And that from there, that is actually where change starts happening out there. That when I rest with him, when I go, God is a God of grace and favor, who doesn't say, come and make sure you prove this week how you're doing it, but who says, you're in love relationship with me because I am your God. I am a God of covenant, Yahweh is used through this, who has initiated while you were still being silly. And so, final illustration, I pulled this one back up because I guess it's the most embarrassing. This has to be reapplied to my hair, right? But it gives you very strong warnings. There are certain surfaces that it adheres to very well, such as fingernails, countertops, sink tops. So my wife rolls her eyes at that one because we have a few stains. Washcloths, we have a few ruined. Towels, I have now found a black towel because I didn't want to ruin those. But what's my point? There are certain surfaces it does adhere to. This is calling us to have hearts that are surfaces that God is able to adhere to. There's a lot to think about in worship. How are you doing in worship? Is it boring to you? We're asking those questions as a session. If you have feedback for us, it is. But some is, we get out of things what we put into them too, some. And so some is as well, asking the Lord, give me a heart that adheres to you as the good, true God, offering a good, true story when I gather with your people on Sunday morning. That's easy, I know. There's a lot of hard application that you'll be working out in your community groups today. But let us pray. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, you call us to worship for our good. That's astounding. And yet this is hard. Our minds wander, our hearts resist. And so we continue to ask that this muscle, this core muscle of our church would continue to develop and strengthen and grow. And that we as individuals would do that, but we as a body would do it. For your glory's sake, we ask. And all God's people sang,
amen.
Children make their way back before communion, and as we prepare, let's stand and sing. Amen.